Jesus had a way that he asked the disciples. There's a passage that's listed in at least three of the gospel books of the Bible where it's the toward the end of his life, and he's sitting. It's that night where he's about to tell the disciples some bad stuff's about to come down. The next few days are not going to look real pretty. And Jesus said to his disciples, "Who do you say I am?" Who do you say I am? Now, why would he ask a question like that? Think about that. Why would he ask a question? It didn't matter to him what they thought. You know, he wasn't looking for a compliment. He wasn't hoping they'd all say, "Oh, you're wonderful," so that he could feel better. You know, none of that mattered to this man that we read these accounts about. But he didn't, so we know he didn't need their feedback. But he asked the disciples this question, "Who do you say I am?" so that they, the disciples, could witness their own reactions to him. See, what happens when you ask that question? Where does your mind go? What kind of things do you see? And this was a way for the disciples to be in ownership of whatever their responses were. So I'm just going to make this up. But what if Matthew said, so Jesus asked the question, and by the way, Peter was the first to respond, and Peter said, "Why, you are the Christ." And the way it's written, at least in the book of Mark, it sounds like he was kind of proud of himself, like he got the answer right, you know, hoping for some kudos. Sounds like Peter. but Matthew might have answered, "Well, Jesus, I think you're a really good healer." And Mark might have said to him, "You have a really big heart, Lord." And then you've got Thomas, you know, Thomas. And Thomas might have said something like, "I don't know, Lord, I do have a few concerns." Right? Right? So you can only see what you can see. You can only see what's right in front of you based on what's right inside of you, the things that we can't see. So these are good questions. And I think they are really good questions so that we can see where we are judging. Where do we hold our opinions or our beliefs as truth? And how does that smallen our world as opposed to expanding it? I heard a minister, a Unity minister, share this example. I love this example. And I'm so happy you're here today because this is not for you, but this is kind of fun that you're here today because you'll get it. I heard, and this is true, this Unity minister said that he often, like all of us ministers, will be people will approach him and say, "What sign are you? What's your astrological sign?" And it is a question we get asked a lot. And he said that he developed this habit. This is how he answers that question. "What sign are you?" And he goes, "I don't know. What sign do you think I am?" And in the way that they answer, because they always want to tell, because people that know the signs, you know, they know it, and they are our authority on all of those things. They always want to tell. But he said that the way they would answer that question would always reveal what they believed about him as a minister. So it's not to say that there isn't some strange and real accuracy in all that study of astrology, but it is to invite us to not just get locked into thinking that's all, or using it as an excuse. If you want good counseling in that direction, this Jenny is really good to that. And Jenny uses astrology, in my opinion, you use it to help you understand other people better and how to maneuver through your relationships with people. So I admire that. By the way, do you remember quite a few years ago when before the car industry went a little crazy and they started closing factories back in Ohio. I don't know if it was GM or I don't remember which one, but there was this masterful idea that they were going to create a line of cars named after the astrological signs, and that they would release them. They'd spread out the release date of them, and therefore we have the Ford Taurus and things on that order. But it didn't take very long before they realized might have been the problem with the crash in the automobile world. Crash was the wrong word to put with that, wasn't it? But part of the reason things didn't go so well in the future was because they produced three or four of these cars named after astrological signs, all kinds of problems began to occur. In fact, they had higher recall than with any other model car they'd ever had. The first car they put out was an Aries, and the Aries had acceleration problems. Then they tried the Scorpio, but the Scorpio only came with a back seat. And then they made a car called the Pisces. Well, you know Pisces. You know, you try and steer the Pisces right, the car would go left. You try and steer it left, the car would go right, because let's face it, everybody knows you can't steer a Pisces. Am I right? All right. All right, so the aim of life, I think, is for us to look at our own growth, not our neighbors. Didn't we all do that? You know, I love looking at some of my old early books when I was on this path. Everything that really excited me, I wrote somebody's name next to that paragraph because I knew they could really benefit from that information. And we're all like zealots when we start getting turned on and our life starts shining and we get kind of excited about, wow, this is real stuff. This really works and I can apply it and use it in my life and you need to use it too. And so we go around and they say they should lock up all religious zealots for about a year before they let us loose again. But it's about our life, not our neighbors, not our friends. It can help us to understand our coworkers and our loved ones, our relatives. But most important, it keeps us on track to be accountable for recognizing we're bringing our own interpretation and our own perception into everything. Ask yourself always, who do you say I am? And I'll tell you something, when I get confused on that, when I'm not clear who I am, I give it to God. I give it to God and so those old Christian days, then I'll just go, Lord, have mercy. Who do you say I am? And if I ask Spirit who I am, I get a powerful and resounding answer immediately. You're a child of God. It is the Father's good pleasure to give you all the gifts of the kingdom. And then I cannot waver from knowing that truth. So these are good questions. These are questions that will help us get back on track. All the work we do on this planet, in my opinion, is about getting back to the true self. Where's Santa? Right? Am I right? It's the title of Mark's most recent book. What is it? The true you, your true you, or... The true you. In fact, Mark and I are having a discussion about him teaching a class based on that book after the turn of the year. Wouldn't that be fun? So give me some dates, Mr. Mark. So the true you, it's always about getting back to your true self, always being willing to look at what's yours, be willing to not claim everything that looks like it's yours. If you have that problem, I've had that problem. And again and again and again, we get to return to love. We get to notice that it's kind of a part of the nature of the human being to cover over our woundedness. You know, sometimes we take little parts of our personality where we're a little too quirky, you know, where I'm a little too eclectic, and then I get embarrassed by that, and I want to cover over it. So we reject it or deny it or we bury it in there and try and wall it up so that people won't know that we're that quirky or that we have certain behaviors that we don't want anybody to know, you know, because we always want to appear nice, right? We don't want to be on the naughty side. We want to be on the nice side. It's human nature to cover over those things. But when we cover over them, they're still in there and it's a woundedness. So instead, if we could learn to love ourselves, to have compassion for ourselves, to love ourselves so much that we could heal that sense of woundedness, whether or not we get it, we could begin to heal that because the divine light, the focus, allowing God's light, that divine illumination, is love. It is what heals all things. It is the way we return to that sense of wholeness, because anything less than that is a sense of being separated or disconnected from each other. So always to heal, we are returning to a clearer understanding of that wholeness, of that truth of who we are. And we get to practice it again and again and again. Ernest Holmes, I notice in our textbook, in much of his writing, not just the textbook, he speaks to the idea that every day we should do this. Every day, every morning when you wake up, you could do this. And so there's this plethora of information, of little daily ideas, of ways we could align ourselves intentionally and consciously back to the spiritual truth of who we are. I found this, it's an Eastern proverb. It doesn't give a quote, it doesn't say who quoted it actually, it comes from the East. There is nothing noble in being superior to some other person. True nobility comes from being superior to your previous self. Right? Day by day. Day by day, we make a commitment to be a little kinder, to be a little more loving, to stand aligned to our personal truth with a little more clarity. Day by day, just one foot in front of the other. You know, every day I wake up and a part of my morning prayer is for clarity. I just want to be clear. Because if I'm clear, if I have that, if I invite that divine illumination to shine on all my activities for that day, then I'm going to be a lot more understanding. I'm going to be a lot more accepting. I'm going to be a lot more willing to participate in life at a higher level. In the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, that's Charles Fillmore is credited with that. I think it's quite expanded since then from what's on the internet. It's fabulous. In the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, under the word judgment, it defines it this way. Judgment is a matter of divine law. And whenever you deviate from that law, you suffer. You can't help but suffer when you try and go contrary to these natural laws. When you try and live your life outside of spiritual principle, you will suffer because it is impossible to do that. It's cause and effect. It's just the way it is. You reap what you sow. In the East, they call it karma. So when we depart from the law of love, we are creating separation in our lives, right? We've disconnected from God. We then disconnect from each other. When we deviating from that law of love, we create more wounds, or we enhance the wounds that are already there. When we separate from God's love, we create disease in our bodies and we suffer. When we return to love, instant healing in all ways. So it really is the whole issue, you know. It really is more than looking at this idea of being naughty or nice or trying to please anybody in authority or anybody we love or care about, trying to please people so that we can have a better relationship that is still reaching outside of us. What we want to do is sit and love ourselves every day so that we are ready to meet the world in a different way. I think it is natural for the human mind to be so critical. You know, I think we have to have tools to combat that, because I believe that we are critical because we know we can show up better than we are. We know we are worthier than we have thought ourselves to be. We know deep down at the level of the heart, of that deep place of connecting with love, we know that there are greater truths than are apparent to us when we are walking through our little shenanigans. But love is not critical, and criticism is not loving. It's not nice to criticize other people, but it's really awful the way that we condemn ourselves and criticize ourselves. And it has to start here first. So, the Christmas season invites us to dive deep, doesn't it? In so many ways. It is an invitation to us, especially in the West, to revisit a story about a tiny baby born in very humble surroundings a baby that brought hope to all the world. And that's what the Christmas story is really about. And I think that if I look at that story, and this is what I thought this week as I pondered these things, that maybe it had to be a baby so that we wouldn't judge. Let us return to that childlike love. Let us put our judgments aside for just a little while. And let us stay in check. Let us call on that divine light to uplift us in such a way that we can see beyond the human vision, that we can hear more than the ears hear, that we can sense our oneness with God and therefore our connection to each other, for it is divine. Let's just take a moment to shift our attention now away from the idea of words and the images our mind creates. And I'd like you just to take a moment to reflect on everything spoken this morning and determine what your gem is this day. What will you take home with you today? And now let's move inward to that glorious place where God abides. For a moment, just soften your heart by allowing yourself to feel tenderness. Think of something or someone that you love, some way in which the beauty of life rests in your heart, safe. Beyond the criticisms or the distorted perceptions, we just feel the love of God within us. And I feel that love as the activity of life. I sense it here in this room. I know it is that power and that presence that is greater than I am. And it is a power for good. I feel that love of God in its immensity. And I know it is that infinite wisdom, that intelligence that allows every element of life to interact with every other element of life. I know that that infinite intelligence is that which allows our bodies to move through any experience of dis-ease. That there is an intelligence within us that knows how to restore us to health, that it is active even now. So wherever there is an appearance of less than perfect functioning in our physical being, we call, by the words of this prayer, we call on that intelligence to do what it does best. To restore us to truth, to fill us with that activity of life that I know to be love, so that that intelligence is ignited and every cell of our bodies is vibrant with that perfect vitality and truth, expressing as the outpicturing of a vibrant life. I know that this life is infinite. So wherever we have experienced the loss of a loved one, including our beautiful Margaret Dirksen, I simply know that that life is eternal, that it is now just a newer design, a new way of living and soaring and laughing and loving. I'm grateful for knowing this truth. That eternality of all of life, and that sometimes that passing is the very healing. And wherever there is any sense of limitation in any way, I simply know that we live in this gorgeous, abundant universe, and that it is the givingness of God, that is the grace of God, and that the gifts of the Father pour into our lives. We allow ourselves to become vessels to receive. We open ourselves for every good gift. And as these gifts arrive, we recognize that indeed they're for us, that we are that which is that essence of love. We are an extension of the divine, and therefore we are entitled to love and to beauty, to peace and to joy. These are natural and inherent in our expression of being. And so I am grateful to know that this is how life works, that we are accountable only for returning to our center, for expanding in that idea of wholeness and completeness and that perfect pattern of life expressing through us and as us. So we just say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit, for all of these gifts, for this new awareness, for this day of being conscious and awake, and for all the love that results in our life because of it. And in this spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always says, yes, I let it be, and together we say, and so. Uh-oh, do I have to stay on beat or something?
Yeah.
We could be in trouble.
You could wear the hat.
Oh, you got another one?
I do need a microphone.
Oh, okay.
Okay, this is fun. Sing along.
Silver bells.
Silver bells.
Silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Soon it will be Christmas Day.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, leaving smile after smile.
And on every street corner you
Did I overdo it?
All right, so it's time for our offering, and we have an affirmation that we like to say out loud because we know there's power in the vibration of our words.